Today, the 25th of November. And what does that mean? Well, for most of us, it means it's 1 month till Christmas today. Wow, that's a bit scary. For those of us who haven't really done too much in terms of getting ready, because we've all come out of lockdown and the last thing we want to do is think about having to organise things or something. Anyway, it is the 25th of November. And in other parts of the world, those astute listeners will know that it's also Thanksgiving Day. Yes, in North America in particular and other parts of the world, Thanksgiving Day is a very big celebration. It's a national holiday celebrated in the US, Canada, Grenada, St. Lucia and Liberia and a few other places. And it started off right back with a celebration of thanks to recognise the sacrifices and the blessings of the past year for, well, initially in Plymouth, Massachusetts, where the pilgrims celebrated together with the indigenous Indians. And that's how Thanksgiving started. And I had hoped to have an American guest dialing in this morning, but he hasn't been able to. So we'll have to wait till next year or something like that. So today, a month from Christmas, how have you managed all this Zooming over the last 18 months or so, going digital and not being able to have conversations face-to-face, not being able to be in the workplace, not being able to be out and about spending time with people? We've all had to adjust, haven't we? And that learning curve for some of us, myself included, has been, well, it's been a challenge. And so I thought today, look, I reckon it's about time we started to focus again on all things digital. So that's our theme for this morning's program, all things digital. And there is no one better, well, at least no one that I know, better to talk about all things digital than the amazing Belle Temby, all the way via Zoom from Mallacoota. Belle, good morning, Belle. How are you?
Happy Thursday, Bruce. I'm good, thank you. Nice to be here today.
That is fantastic. And for those of you who don't know where Mallacoota is, it's about as far as you can go and still be in Victoria and be away from Melbourne. I think it's about 6 hours drive, Belle. That's a long haul.
It is a long haul, and it is as remote as you can get. I think it is one of the most remote towns that you will find in Victoria. And like you said, it's on the far east, the far, far, far east Gippsland, just below Eden in New South Wales.
And Belle, you've moved there not so long ago from Kinglake. You were almost local here, the Yarra Valley, and you moved to Mallacoota, and then along came the horrific bushfires of last summer, and Mallacoota was right, sadly, right in the middle of all of that, Belle. It must have been a huge transition for you.
Yeah, I think it was actually really, it shocked us a little bit, to be honest, because we had been in the same boat moving from, moving into Kinglake. We purchased and settled on our property there 3 months before the Black Saturday bushfires. And then we found ourselves a week before the fires in Mallacoota, having locked away the property in the move. And then those fires went through. And we thought we'd better not move anymore and make sure that we call the CFA every time we plan. It did seem a little overwhelming, I must admit. And now that we're here, though, there's been so much rain. You would have noticed most likely that there's the La Nina has been called for the year. So all of this rain has really contributed to a beautiful regrowth in some of the areas. So we definitely see a lot of that new growth, which really, really helps the mindset in a bushfire to see the environment around you.
And Belle, we do have a time lag, I notice, on our Zoom this morning. It must be that 6 hours between here and Mallacoota, but we'll work with it. But I notice just on the weather forecast going on the back of El Nino that you are expecting a huge downpour there. I think it's today. So lots more rain for you, up to 100 mils, I think someone was predicting for Mallacoota. And my special guest here on Community Conversations this morning is Belle Temby, all the way from Mallacoota. And we are having a couple of NBN challenges there, but we'll get there, Belle. So just hang in there. Mallacoota, a great little community, a great sense of community. Tell us, how has it been settling in? I know you are very passionate about community and being a part of it. How's that going for you 12 months or 18 months now on?
Yeah, good question, Bruce. It's definitely more challenging having COVID in the way, making a big move and then not being able to go outside and make any new friends. But I did manage to join the Business and Tourism Association here in Mallacoota, and that's been really fun for me. It's a new community group that I haven't had a lot of involvement with on a committee level before. So that's very exciting. And I just see similarities between King Lake, where I've come from, and Mallacoota, where I've moved to, in that there are hundreds of community groups, hundreds of people working in community groups with all different passions, and it just is a delight, really. There's even a group that does dragon boat racing. Well, not racing, I think it's just dragon boating. I'm not even sure how you refer to it. And that's another thing I'd like to get into, to hit the lakes here and start paddling on a dragon boat with a bunch of people from town. Isn't that great?
And Belle, of course, you've got a lot more water in Mallacoota than what you had in King Lake, haven't you?
Yeah, no water in the name, but in Mallacoota there are lakes, rivers, it's an estuary system surrounded by pristine coastal waters. It is, and I really love the water, and people are often fooled in King Lake when they're visiting and touring through King Lake. We often see people come up with their boat saying, and they never find the lake. We have to tell them they have to go somewhere else, off to Bonnie Doon.
Oh, I hadn't heard that story. That's
in
great.
In Mallacoota, everywhere you look.
Fantastic. Belle, we promised our listeners we'd talk all things digital this morning. So let's go back to, well, your history. I mean, you're a young person. You're a pioneer in things digital. And tell us how did you get into the digital space? What was the driver? How come that was the trajectory that you followed? What was the passion that drove you?
I think with a lot of things that people find themselves in, it happened completely by accident. So it also was timely because I was at school in the time that computers were entering schools. So it just happened to be there at the same time, and therefore it wasn't so foreign to me. It was easy for me to pick up and run with, and teachers who knew nothing about computers to use them, so we were all learning together. So I think that was a little bit of fun, and we took a lot of initiative in those early years. And then I just seemed to intersect with IT teams in various organizations that I worked with. I then worked with a lot of systems and databases, and I thought, oh, this is pretty good. I like how these things work. And I was at a high school one day and came across a teacher who was having a lot of trouble managing the careers of 1,000 students that she had to give career advice to. And I just said to her off the cuff, well, what do you think if I built a system to help you collect this information from students? And then I found myself developing a software product in collaboration with 9 other schools. And that's how I then got into this whole space as a more formal career, where I was running my own business. So all completely by accident ideas.
You're listening to Belle Temby, who's the Director of Digital Services Lab. I hesitate to say you're based in Mallacoota because you're not, Belle. You're offering, well, services and supports and working all across the country. So we won't confine you to Mallacoota, but we will commend you for working in a space that, for some of us, we're not as comfortable about, and you've been very free in sharing your knowledge and your experience with not-for-profit groups and community groups and businesses all around the place. So let's start with the obvious question. What do we mean when we say digital, all things digital? What are we confining ourselves to? What are we including under the tab of digital?
Oh, that's a good question. And I think when it comes to my particular business, we are talking about all of the tools that are powering your online presence. So we're talking about your websites, the tools that people use to consume a website, so mobile phones, iPads, laptops and desktops. And then we're talking about the infrastructure that exists online, the whole marketing landscape, so all of those social media tools. And then you have, of course, other organizations who are running they're doing things in digital as well, but it's with all of the hardware. So all the things that we're doing are with software, and of course digital encompasses just a huge amount of hardware and software, and yeah, it can be pretty unwieldy. And confusing, really.
It can.
But anything we talk about today will be online.
Yeah, fantastic, Belle. My guest this morning via Zoom from Mallacoota is Belle Timby, the Director of Digital Services Lab. And we're talking about all things digital. And seems like, Belle, the place to start is to have a strategy, a digital strategy. So what does a digital strategy look like, and how do we get one?
Yeah, good question, Bruce. Thank you. I think when we are talking about, you know, what are the keys to success when it comes to using digital media well for community groups and not-for-profits, it really does have to start with a plan. So, and I like, if you don't already have a plan in place, then we've got to start with a really simple plan that's going to see some success and some wins in, you know, the first year that you implement it. So a place that I always start is to take actually your headspace out of what you're going to do digitally and think about what it is you're trying to do for your organization. So you need to understand what your goals are. Are your goals to increase the number of people that are participating in a certain program or group? Are your goals trying to increase fundraising for something that you want to do within your organization? Are you trying to engage more volunteers? So if one of those three things is your goal, then you think, okay, great, well, who is my audience? So you want to define the audience that you have that you're going to target so that you can achieve that goal that you've set. Then we want to look at, so once we know what our goal is, who our audience are that we're going to target, we then want to look at the digital landscape. So what channels or online tools are going to help you reach your audience and to ultimately achieve your goal? So that means your website might play a part, your social media channels might play a part, perhaps you're going to do a text message campaign. So we have to define all of that. And again, in keeping it simple, I like to say if you've never done anything before, then just start with one thing. So I'm going to improve my website and I'm going to use one social media channel. I do see some organizations say, okay, well, we're doing this great strategy and now we're going to take up seven social media channels all at once, and we've got one person for 1 hour a week to do it all, and that's just simply unrealistic.
Yeah.
So let's take it one step at a time. It's really important that you have the technology you need. So do you have a computer and internet that's going to be able to support you to do this? And then we'll say, okay, so what is my digital goal? And the goal might be, if you wanted to raise $1,000 in a year, then your digital goal might be that I'm going to try and raise 500 of that from my online channels and 500 of that from the work that I do in person and around the community. So the digital goal is raise $500 that directly into Facebook. So you'll say to people, okay, I'm going to use Facebook and I am going to start a campaign to drive people to my website, and at my website, that's where people will donate. Does that sound really simple to you, Bruce?
No, that sounds like a strategy. And I'm holding in my hot little hand here, even though you can't see it, listeners, I'm holding a great little brochure called Digital Strategy, and it talks about the three-hour workshops that you run, Belle, which is fantastic offer. If you're interested in one of those workshops, just send an email to Belle, hello@digitalservicelab.com.au, and Belle will tell you all about that. But you do make it sound simple, Belle, but we know it's not, although at the same time, I think your wise words there are, don't take on everything all at once, just be targeted and a little bit more, circumspect about how much you can really, really do. You've mentioned the website, Belle, and you've got an amazing checklist that I'm also holding in my hand, a simple checklist to help you evaluate your website. And is it really doing what you want it to do? Belle, there's more information on here than what we're going to have time to talk about today, but when we think about our website, give us a few things, perhaps some things that people do well and perhaps some things that people really don't do well with their websites in your experience.
Yeah, okay, great. So I think one of the biggest things that I see let not-for-profit organisations down is actually their homepage. It's really a critical page of the website. There are some technical things that need to be worked out on a website as well, such as speed, and it needs to obviously work. But when it comes to the homepage, I find that a lot of not-for-profits forget to express their why, like why they exist, why they're doing the work that they do, and who they're doing it for. And I understand why that happens, because we so often get caught up volunteering or working in an organization, and we intrinsically know what it's all about, but we forget to express that to others and to have a really clear statement about what we're doing. I don't mean just a vision and mission statement can be fantastic, but sometimes they might be a little bit outdated. So I think it's really important that when visitors arrive at your website, they immediately aware of what your not-for-profit organization stands for and the types of people that you help. So if you can address the problems of the individuals, it's not necessarily problems, but if you can let people know how you can solve the issues that they're going through, then that's going to make them want to dig deeper into your website. But if they come to a homepage that's really unclear, really messy, then they're not going to know where to go. They're not going to know to even go to another page. They're actually just going to leave your website. So the homepage is vital. Another part that is vital is design and images. So you do want to make a really good use of images. And I know we often want our own images, but in the absence of having a really good photographer, sometimes diverting to stock images, and people roll their eyes and, oh, no, not the stock images. But it makes a website look a bit more professional when you have a professional image, at least on your homepage. And by all means, put a gallery page up that's got lots of photos that might be pixelated. That's okay, because it's still going to show who you are. But you do want to try and make a really good first impression. So either get someone that really knows what they're doing behind a camera to take that hero shot for your organization, or, you know, I'd say go for the stock images as well. Just trying to raise that level of professionalism. So you also want to make sure that your design of your website is responsive. That's really important today. We know that people are using their mobile phones more so than desktop to access websites. So it's really important to have a responsive design. So I think they would be my top three things: homepage, responsive design, and good images.
Fantastic, Bel. What where do people go, aside from Digital Services Lab, where do people go to, you know, get their websites and their digital strategy in place, Bel? And do they need to spend a lot of money to do this or not?
You either have to spend a lot of time in building the skills and the knowledge so that you can do it yourself, and you absolutely can do it yourself, and there are tools out there that will help in the aid of that. They do have drag and drop builders, and they have templates available for those on a really tight budget. And that would mean that you can go to places like Wix or Squarespace. They would be probably the two that I would recommend. There are a lot of smaller players out there, but the problem with that is they're not as reliable as other providers, because they are small, so they're more at risk of actually disappearing. So it is good to go with the bigger players. Digital Services Lab, my business, we specialize in WordPress, which means that WordPress powers over 40% of the websites on the internet in the world. So it's an incredibly robust tool, and it means there are an abundance of developers available. So not just me, but there are every other web developer knows how to use WordPress, and that's a really good thing, because it means you can get a good skill set, good specialization in people, and not have to pay through the roof for it. So when you look for a Squarespace or a Wix developer, for example, if you can do it all yourself, that's great. But then if you do need to go to that expert level, there are fewer of those developers around. Not that there are none, but there are fewer. So it is worth making these considerations early on about, is it going to cost you more in the long run to do it a certain way that you think is going to save you money, but ultimately you don't have that skill set? And are you willing to put in the hours of training that you need to do to build your own? And if you do have an abundance of money, then Bob's your uncle and you can build with anyone that you want. I can give you some recommendations for choosing a developer as well, if you want, Bruce.
Fantastic. And we'll just give your email address one more time. hello@digitalservicesLab.com.au. Are you okay if people send you a question or just want a referral or something like that, Belle? Yep, you're nodding there. I can see you on camera.
Absolutely. And I,
my very special guest here talking all things digital is Belle Temby from Digital Services Lab. And Belle, the world has, stating the bleeding obvious, the world has changed in the last 2 years. We've all been, well, most of us have been confined for extended periods of lockdowns, and we haven't liked it. We've adjusted, we've adapted. But what does the online world in terms of meetings and digitals, and we don't need to talk about particular brands of online meeting necessarily. But what is it here to stay, Belle? And what are we going to do differently as a result of all these lockdowns?
Yeah, isn't it an interesting question? And I think we're so excited to be out of these lockdowns that we sometimes forget that we aren't out of this yet, and we don't actually know what this looks like for us in Australia, at least. We've got some indicators from what's happening overseas. We're very fortunate to have the rates of vaccination that we do have at the moment, so it might look different for us in the future. But I think what lockdowns have left us with is video calls. It's one thing that we can be certain of, that most people are now using video calls like true professionals. And I think that it has also meant that we've been able to shift to a lot of remote living, a lot of remote working, a lot of remote learning. And as a society, I think from what I've heard on other programs and experts talking, that people have really started to evaluate their lives, and they're starting to think about, well, I don't have to work in a city and I don't have to live in a city. I can be employed by someone who is 600 kilometres away, like I happen to be, and I can continue doing the work that I was doing before in new ways because of all of the tools that have presented themselves, and because we had to shift our mindsets. And we might find that actually it's in Victoria more so than anywhere else in the country, because we are the ones that have been in the biggest sets of restrictions and in the most confinement compared to the whole of Australia. So I think it would be interesting to know what's happening outside of Victoria, because we really have been, sorry to use the dreaded word, but we really have been in our own bubble, in our own COVID bubble in Victoria. So, yeah, I think that is maybe the pros of where we find ourselves in Victoria, at least, is that because of the tools that have come out of this pandemic, we're now able to have this life that we design ourselves. You know, we're starting to become the architects of our own lives. What do you think, Bruce?
Well, I think there's been some good things. I mean, as you've just highlighted, we wouldn't be having this conversation today, for example, 600 Ks away, if it weren't for our capacity to do this via, you know, online, Belle. And, you know, I think back over the last few months of the many video calls that I've been involved with, and, you know, people from around the world, around the country, insights, connections, panels, things that we've been able to discuss that, you know, we just wouldn't have had those groups together. On the other side, we all know that there's a huge place for human interaction as well. And we were just talking off air, Belle, weren't we, that, you know, we both miss that. You know, being able to connect with people, to sit and have a coffee and have a conversation face to face with someone is hard to beat as well. So it's that sort of balance, I think. And going forward, isn't it, Belle, going to be from a point of view of expediency? I think there is going to be less flying, you know, between Sydney and Melbourne, that amazing air corridor that many of us used to do regularly. I think there's going to be less of that because people can see that, you know, we can still have meetings and conversations online. But then again, there's also going to be that place, you know, to get our team together, to have a strategy session with a real whiteboard and all of that as well, Belle, you know. So I think, but I mean, isn't it marvellous for those of us who don't live in a city and used to commute 3 hours every day, Belle, that I don't have to do that every day. You know, that's 3 hours back in my day now.
Yeah, and it's, oh, isn't that great that you get this extra time and you get to focus on new things. But it is one of the things I think of too, Bruce, that people, you know, we have said, okay, well, I'm going to move my family and my life to a new place, and I am going to be able to work remotely, and I am going to be able to connect online with people. But are they missing out on those human connections that we actually do love and desire and need? But just because we've been in lockdown for the better part of 18 months, we've forgotten what it's like to have that. And are people that have just moved so far away, are they actually going to miss all of these people that they used to connect in with? So, yeah, there is that whole flip side of you know, what we miss in that one-on-one human interaction and that tactile and more visceral experience that you can have.
Fantastic. You're listening to Belle Temby, who's the Director of Digital Services Lab, and, well, I can't think of anyone better to talk to about things digital, Belle. Your insights over the years to me and the things you've shared, I know, have helped me immensely, and I thank you for that. And I know you help many community groups, many not-for-profit organisations and businesses all across the country. So well done, you. You make it sound easy. We're talking all things digital this morning with my guest, Belle Temby. And Belle, the year is rapidly running out. We've got 5 weeks left or thereabouts, a month till Christmas. And then we're going to be in that magic year of 2022, which we all hope is going to be vastly different from 2021 and 2020. And well, in particular in relation to lockdowns for those of us here in Victoria. So is it too early to start thinking about social media and planning for 2022, Belle?
Absolutely not. I think get stuck into it this year so that you can hit the ground running next year, and hopefully people are taking a holiday.
Yes. So what does planning in terms of social media, what does planning for the coming year look like, Belle? And what are the steps we should be thinking about taking sometime over the next couple of months?
Well, what you are going to need if you are planning on putting content out there in social media land is a content plan. And that can be a bit of a game changer for the way that you approach your social media in any given year, because you do the work now, you plan out what you're going to focus on for 2022, and then you just have to follow the plan. So it's not, you know, rock up to work on Monday mornings and think, oh, what am I going to put out there this week? You can actually create a bit of a strategy. I'm a bit of a strategy nerd. And that's going to just help your team get everything online with as little fuss as possible. So should I start by giving a couple of tips?
Please, I would love to. I love tips. I love tips, Belle. Go for it.
Okay, great. So before you start churning out your content, again, get clear on what you want to achieve with your content. You know, what's the purpose of putting it out there? Who are you talking to? You can't talk to everybody, so don't try. If you are trying to talk to mothers or fathers or sisters or whoever it might be, think about who that audience is, and then direct your content as if you're having a conversation with them. And understand where they're hanging out. So if you are trying to reach an 18-year-old young person, Facebook is not the place. It was the place when 22 years ago when we were all 18. well, that's people my age, I should say. but now it's people that are between 40 to 55 and trending upwards on that age group. So you might need to be places in the likes of the dreaded TikToks and Snapchats. So you do have to understand where that audience is hanging out, and then make sure that that's your plan is to engage with them then. And you want to know what the tone and voice of your nonprofit is. So, you know, are you very serious? Are you fun? Are you medical? What is the kind of voice that you want to portray to that audience? and how much time and resources can you devote to creating that content? So that's really important as well. So map out your online channels that align better with your nonprofit and its goals and your audience, and then map out the type of content that you'll post. So what are you going to focus on? A good one for me is blogs. So most websites have a blog, and it's a great way for you to attract traffic. So you're basically killing two birds with one stone. You write your blog. It's an in-depth article about a topic that your non-for-profit is familiar with. You can involve other staff, and each staff member could have a blog article that they're responsible for writing in a year. And then this is going, that blog is going to be your cornerstone content for a month. So let's say you want to focus on volunteers for your organization in January. So you might have a blog that is a case study of a volunteer and all the amazing things that they've gotten out of working with your organization. So you have that in a blog, and then you can use snippets of that blog, little parts of that blog, in social media over the following month. And that's a great way to have those pieces of content really working hard for you, but also working in a way to attract traffic through search engine result pages and through social media. So then, of course, you can have other content. So you might have photos that you use. You might have stories that you want to share. You might have YouTube videos, which can be really great these days. People are incredibly forgiving of an amateur video on YouTube and social. So you do not have to spend huge dollars in having a professionally put together video. If you just want to get someone behind a camera on an iPhone or whatever phone that you have for one minute to 5 minutes talking about something, then go for it. Just make sure your background's looking nice and neat. Then you want to map out the frequency. So whatever you do, you want to try and be consistent. And I'll be honest, I'm actually really bad at this myself. And so it's one of my goals in 2022 to be more consistent and really map out my frequency that I post on social media. So give yourself a bit of time to experiment. See if you're not posting anything at all, let's go for one piece of content per week. So you might spend a big amount of time on the blog, and then you're going to post that to your website, and then one post per week, and that's it.
Fantastic. Belle, I can't believe it. We are actually out of time, and we're going to go straight to the news in a moment. But a huge thank you to you for sharing so freely your insights around the digital space. There's so much more I know that you could share, and I think we're just going to have you back in 2022. I'll twist your arm, and we'll have you on another program.
I'd love to be back. Thank you, Bruce.
Fantastic.